Welcome to the Life Over Coffee podcast, conversations for transformation.
The wedding day is not the best time to learn how to be a spouse. Too many young couples begin this way, unfortunately, and I would be one of those formerly young couples. Without prior marriage training, they had to figure it out, how to get along with each other in the school of hard knocks. Many of you have been there. Maybe some of you are twitching as you think about that school of hard knocks. Some of them, unfortunately, do not endure their marriage, which was my story as well. And that is why we chose to give our son three wives when it came time to begin teaching him how to be a husband, the art of husbandry. My thought was, if practicing makes perfect, then the assumption is that we could help him get close to what it means to be a biblical husband should that day ever come in his life. Now, when I said that we gave him three wives, I'm not suggesting that we have joined the Mormon faith and we're not polygamists. I have one wife and she's sufficient. Praise God. One is enough. Two is too many. And three is a crowd. But our son is different. You see, he's in training. He has been in marriage training since he was about, I would say, 3 years old. The hope is that by the time he ties the knot, that the art of husbandry will be like painting by numbers. Three practice wives will give him many opportunities to get his reps in. We figured if he could get along with the three ladies in our home, meaning his mom and his two sisters, then he would have the necessary upfitting to marry a young lady, to love her, to learn her, to lead her well. And so I introduced this notion of three wives to him as like wearing leg weights. Hebrews 12:2 talks about the weights that we carry about us. After you remove them, you feel like you can run forever. Now, perhaps some of you have had that experience, that as you watched that infomercial and they were selling these leg weights and you recognize that you could look like Charles Atlas or whoever the paragon of physicality was in your day, and you put on those leg weights because you bought them, and then you took them off and you feel like you could just run forever. During his childhood, our son persevered under the burden of his three practice wives. Now, perhaps if you haven't intuited what I'm actually saying, I might need to give a little explanation here. Every home is a tight, inescapable community where sinners live elbow to elbow with each other. We call it our box. After you get married, you move into an autonomous domestic empire, also called a box, where two sinners or more live in proximity to each other forever. And how each family member treats the other members is a snapshot of their strengths, their weaknesses, their qualities, and their quirks. Everybody knows this. When you come together as husband and wife, and then you begin adding little sinners into your home, the best and worst of us is going to come out. It is a laboratory of sorts to where we can learn, grow, mature, change. That is the idea. The paying attention parent sees these relational clues in their children, which signal areas where work must happen to make the other a better relational human being. You see, a marriage certificate will not make a person mature or immature. The wedding day sets the long-term context for the people to be who they were before the wedding day. There's no upgrade when a guy becomes a husband. Whatever he brings to the wedding day will determine the kind of marriage that he and his wife will have. This perspective applies to girls as well. Now, of course, there is repentance and there is ongoing maturity. And so hopefully each moment after the wedding day that he will be getting better and better. But he is a fluid person and so is she. And so whatever the trajectory was before the wedding day, he will be on the same trajectory after the wedding day. And if it's trending downward, well, then the hope is that he will repent so he can set a new trajectory. Some dating and newlywed couples do not understand this perspective. They fall prey to myopic love, which restricts them from seeing beyond what's in the moment. The good news is that they can see into their mate's past beyond the hot date, because each one has a history if they're willing to look into it and to see that trajectory that I was talking about, which is also shaping influences, the things that have molded them into the people that they are today. Sadly, after the honey drips from the honeymoon, myopia burns off and reality can bite pretty hard. Ladies, the man you marry is like a long train with many baggage cars. And just because you were not aware of his baggage or you chose to ignore it, it doesn't mean that it never existed. A parent could help their child to avoid this problem if they provide the appropriate training in the art of marriage while the child is young. I'm speaking from an under-the-sun perspective, of course, because even proactive practice will ultimately not bring what the child needs. It is by the grace of God that any of us is doing well at anything, but you don't want to presume against God's grace by not being all you should be for your child. And so again, I would want each parent to guard from falling into either ditch, the ditch of presumption, what I do does not matter. No, it does matter. Or the ditch of legalism, that what I did, I mean, it all matters, and God's grace cannot transcend, especially my mistakes. Sadly, most parents are concerned more with their child's college choice rather than equipping them for the most important and longest relationship that they will ever have. They steer him to the ideal university and motivate him down a prospective vocational track. That doesn't have to be wrong, but too often they don't equip him to be a spouse. I mean, what would it profit to gain the entire world and be a lousy spouse? This miscalculation is why a son should practice the art of husbandry long before ever becoming one. And so I want to give you five of the more common responses when I bring up this concept of practice wives in the home long before they ever tied a knot with a future wife. Some people will say, well, he will figure it out after he snags a wife. Well, he will, he may. He might, I'm not sure. He will figure out something, no question. He may figure out that I just need to go on to divorce court. That is presumption. Number two, we require him to go to premarital counseling for this. Well, that's okay, but that is a drop in the bucket. Premarital counseling, honestly, is too late. It's not all wrong, but it's also too late. They're in love. They've already made the decision. Love is blind at that point. They're going to tick the boxes of whatever the premarital counseling is. It would be exceptional for them to really see what's going on and for some of them to pull up, pull out when they should. Premarital counseling is really setting the groundwork for after they get married and realize that, well, we weren't paying so much attention during premarital counseling, and they come back to the counselor because now they're ready to get the help that they should have been paying attention to during premarital counseling. Number three, I've never thought about teaching the art of husbandry before marriage. That is one response. Number four, ain't no big deal. Nobody ever taught me. That response is, maybe somebody should have taught you. And then a fifth response is, I don't know how to do that. And at least that's a more humble response that has an element of teachability to it. Most boys who do not learn to respect and honor and serve the women in their home, they will not intuitively pick up on these concepts after marriage. These character traits are habits. And like all habits, they take repetition to become second nature. Kinesthetic memory, muscle memory, that this is their instinct, this is their impulse. A boy's home is the perfect laboratory to teach and to test, hoping to release him into the best version of himself when he's older. Think about some of your bad habits. You can trace most of the roots back to your childhood. Many of our unappealing traits started as children. Why not use that time of childhood to build healthy biblical habits into the psyche, into the soul of your child? The similarity between childhood and marriage is striking. Both are two long-term relational constructs. The child is within a family dynamic where he learns interpersonal relational skills. One of the most important things that he will gain as a child is how to humbly, practically, and wisely respond to sin, which is everyone's kryptonite. It weakens all of us. All of us do it. And his immediate family will give him ample opportunities not only to sin, but to be sinned against, and of course for people to respond to his sin and him to respond to others. Sinning is what fallen people do. I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer here, but I am somewhat of a realist that talks directly and black and white, and that's who I am. I don't apologize for that. I see things that way, and sinning is what fallen people do. I'm not the kind of person to bury my head in the sand. I want to deal with things promptly, precisely, work through stuff, but you got to deal with it from a realistic perspective. Living well with other fallen people is the most challenging thing that you'll ever do, which is why some folks choose to isolate themselves from others. Kids isolate in their homes. Spouses isolate from each other. Living well with others is the ultimate litmus test of a person's maturity, especially those inescapable situations. If external relationships turn sour, you can unfriend them and you can find new ones. You can click a button and now we are no longer friends. Take that. You can leave your church. You can split. You can go somewhere else. But a child can't leave his family, at least not as quickly as some of them would like to exit their families. Some teens talk about how they can't wait till they get out of the home. They are marking the days until the great emancipation. I understand that. They typically choose college or military, girlfriends or careers. They don't perceive their short-sightedness, or they don't factor in how the doctrine of sin is their core problem. Even worse, they don't see how the next long-term relationship will be a different dance, but a similar song. They may leave the home, but they will take their baggage with them. These kids live in a golfer's fantasy. The retiree shanks the ball on the number 7 hole, and he says, "I'll get it right on the next one." That is a golfer's fantasy. There is always one more hole to play, even after the 18th, because there's still tomorrow, and we're going to get this thing right. And though the scratch golfer can live in his dream world, in his fantasy, it will prove disastrous for the immature relationship expert to stay there in an illusion, in a fantasy. I've heard some of these disillusioned teens say, "I didn't choose my parents or my siblings, but I can choose my wife. I can choose my spouse. When I get to make the decision, things will be different." Sin does not care who is doing the picking. It corrupts all people completely, totally. We're totally depraved. You may feel better about being in charge. You may feel better about a change of venue, but you will soon learn that you were a primary contributor to your past dysfunction. There have been millions of young people who jump from the frying pan of a disappointing home life into the fire of a disappointing marriage. They thought the primary problem was the other person in the room. They forgot what Jesus said about the log and the speck. They were angry at the speck, not seeing the Hummer log in their eye. Then they married another sinner, the only type that you can marry. And guess what? The old patterns resurfaced. The baggage is back. They blame their parents. Now they blame their spouse. Some of these ignorant adult children choose to divorce. It's a golfer's fantasy. Of course, sin will be waiting, crouching at the door of the next relationship. Fallenness is the tie that binds all Adamic people together. In Proverbs 22:6, the writer says, "Train up a child in the way that he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it." Children need a sin plan. They need a toolbox that has a repentive, redemptive tools in it so that when sin happens, they have a plan and they can respond to it. The first step in implementing a sound sin plan in the home. One way you can think about this is to use marriage, husband, and wife language when you talk to your children. Let this language be a steady drumbeat in the home, which applies to a son or a daughter. Discuss and demonstrate what it means to relate to a husband or wife within a marriage construct. For example, teach your son to open the car door for his mother. If he has a sister, talk to him about serving her too. When he's entering a building with the females in the family, train him to stop, grab the door, open it for the ladies. There are many other ways to do this, like not talking over each other in the home, never hitting another sibling, or looking her in the eye when talking to her rather than looking at your phone. Of course, no yelling nor name-calling. These are no-brainers. Self-control, restraint, discretion are golden jewels in a relationship. This is part of a sin plan. Teach him how to live with another person by thinking about how husband and wife live with each other, and teach him how eventually what you're teaching him is how to teach him the art of husbandry by equipping him in the skill of husbandry to imitate his father, for example, of how the father, who is a husband, interacts with his wife, his mother. Pictures have much more powerful impact than words. A dad's teaching is secondary and supplementary to how he treats his wife and the girls in the home. If he acts like Jesus to them, it will profoundly shape that little boy. If he is not, the adverse effects are powerful and potentially devastating, real and long-lasting to his future wife, if he hasn't seen it illustrated by his own dad, who is a husband, by his father. Imagine a child receiving 18 or 20 years of marriage messaging about the art of husbandry from his dad. Your steady stream of messages about being kind and thoughtful toward the opposite sex could become so ingrained that he never departs from what he has learned from his home laboratory. The primary things that you're looking for in your children are the heart attitudes that they exhibit toward each other. It's possible to teach them rote behaviors, which could transform them into relational legalists if you don't address the heart behind the actions. There is a world of difference between a spouse ticking the box of right relational responses versus one who has a deep affection for the other person. Some of these heart attitudes are honor, love, respect. I've already mentioned self-control, restraint, discretion, which are all observable fruits of those heart attitudes. When you see it in their behaviors, then you recognize that there's a heart attitude there. The most accurate way to measure a child's heart attitude is by his reactions when he's not getting his way. There will be times when he's having a bad day, or in other instances, a family member will be mean to him. Both situations are snapshots of his future marriage. By observing his current attitudinal responses, you can make at least two conclusions. One, how he responds now is how he's going to react in the future when his wife is selfish and irritable, and she will be both selfish and irritable. Two, how he is responding today gives you the data that you need to prepare him for his future marriage. In Romans 12:10, we have this, it's a competitive verse, I like to call it. Paul says, outdo one another in showing honor. I love that verse. It has a bit of competition to it. It's vital to wrap up all of these concepts that I'm talking about by circling back to the most crucial relational training that you will ever give your child. If you're not modeling the person that you want your son to become, then all of this will fall flat in one or two ways. He will either reject your relationship teaching if you're not practically practicing what you're telling him to be. Or, number two, he will choose to be different from you. He will run as far from you as possible, which could be a better version. But his reactions will come from a heart of anger, frustration, unforgiveness, not because he's head over heels in love with God or others, because he's angry with you and he's reacting to you. Let him see you honoring your wife. Experience your affection for your wife. And by your example, let him know what sacrificial serving looks like. Let him biblically compete, outdoing one another and showing honor. Let him compete with you as you both try to outdo each other in loving the women in your home. If you have girls, treat them as wives. Let them experience what it's like to be cherished, to be nourished, to be loved, to be respected, to be honored, to be served, to be led. It provides the right view of what a biblical man should be, providing images, I called them marriage messages, of what to look for when the time comes to marry someone. If daughters experience this from their dad, they probably won't crave it from boys. You should, as the dad, be their man. Show them what biblical manhood is like by your example to them and to their mother. Please don't leave them to speculate on these matters. Be clear by the life that you display before them in the home. And so, yeah, we joked around about our son having three wives, but he also knew that it was serious business. A few years later, he was probably 8 or 9 when he was able to understand this idea, this concept, with more clarity. And I told him that, you know, you're practicing with the three girls in our home, and it's like leg weights, and someday you'll be able to take it off. And I explained to him that actual marriage, legal marriage and biblical marriage, is that you only have one wife. And he began to understand what I was teaching him, but then it clicked in his head. And he thought, wow, I'll only have one wife. And so he asked, Dad, when can I get married? Three wives is a heavy burden. And he was laboring under the burden of three wives. It's hard to love these three women. I'm not saying that they're necessarily bad. I'm saying that it's hard to love three women because we are sinners. And when he recognized that, wow, marriage is just marrying one person, I can drop these leg weights, I'm ready to go now. Dad, how old do you have to be to get married, Dad? We cherish the women in our home. We don't presume against them. You seek ways to serve them. You want them to feel your love and affection. It's part of what being a man is, learning to lead and to protect the women. How wonderful would it be to have a 3-year-old boy, a 4-year-old boy, and begin to teach him these ideas? When Lucia and I, the kids were younger, when we would go out on a date, I'd tell my son many times, you're the leader. You take care of the girls. He loved stepping up to this responsibility. He loved practicing being a man. And then someday he will be the man as he has his own wife. I've titled this, My Son Has Three Practice Wives to Make Him a Better Husband. This is a great time if you have a son or sons that are younger that you begin to teach them these relational concepts. And they have a laboratory there. And if they have sisters especially or their mom, then they can practice being the man, the little man in the home who is a little husband. And the hope is that by the time that he hits that marriage altar that he has so many reps in that he will take those leg weights off and he will run like the wind. If you want to read this article, one, it's a chapter in a book that I have written that I will share with you in just a moment. But the title of this chapter is My Son Has Three Practice Wives to Make Him a Better Husband. You can find this chapter in my book, The Talk, that is in our store, and I want you to get it. It is a free book about the sex talk, and as you can tell by listening to this chapter, that is more than the practical elements of the sex talk. The last three chapters are about the actual talk, where I do get into the nuts and bolts. It's a 3 to 4 day retreat that you can take your son or daughter on and then walk through the sex talk. All that information is in that book in our store. So again, it's titled The Talk, and I want you to get it, download it. For those of you who do the work of discipleship, use it with these couples that have their babies are born. I mean, and that's when you want to start. I mean, when does the sex talk begin? It begins when the children are born. It begins as they see the relationship between the husband and wife. They learn how to relate to another person, to the opposite gender. The sex talk, the physicality, biblical intimacy, that is relating to another person, the opposite gender. But that is in the context of a relationship that is outside of the bedroom. And that's why it's important that you connect the sex talk with a lifestyle that predates the actual talk that you have with them. And I explain all of that in this book called The Talk. Let me wrap up with a couple of questions here about practice wise for your son. Describe the relational dynamics in your home. That would be a good conversation to have, particularly with your spouse. Are you imitating what it's like to be a husband and wife to your children? Are they seeing what that relationship is like? Specifically in context of this chapter, is the son seeing how to relate to the women in the home? Imagine, again, 20, 25 years of watching that relationship dynamic between husband and wife. And when it comes time to have his own wife, he has so many years that so many marriage messages in his mind that just snap into his mind as he sees what that looks like now. And he can begin to imitate that with his wife. Number two, what are the positive things about the relational dynamics? Number three, what are some of the areas that need improvement? Because you're just like me. None of us have reached sinless perfection, and we know that there is room to grow, and we want to grow. And I trust that that is you as well. And so I also trust that you can have an honest conversation with your spouse. I know that some marriages are not like that. That is just not possible for different reasons, that there's an adversarial relationship between a husband and wife that is hostile. I get it. It happens. But you can talk to someone, and I would appeal to you to talk to a leader in your church, and you can talk with discretion and wisdom, with charitableness towards your spouse. But you do need to talk. We want to be the best examples that we could possibly be to our children. And so the question is, talking about relational dynamics in your home, what are some areas that need improvement? And then, of course, the final question, what are your specific plans and steps to implement those required changes? And so it's not only talking about the problem, but it's implementing those solutions. And then in some of your situations, there'll be only one spouse that's ready to go to implement those things, but you can. You can do that. We can be better people individually before or despite the fact that no one else is coming along with us. And so if your spouse is not willing to go with you to make these changes in your life, you can begin to emulate Christ. We have no reason not to emulate Christ. We should not say that, well, my spouse is not doing this. What does that mean? You're not going to do it either? No. That doesn't make sense. We can be Christ-like. We can be Jesus to other people regardless. And in a home like that, where only half of the marriage is really working to emulate part of Christ and the church, then what you want to do is to give your children a good example. If they already have a bad example in the home, then give them a good example and let them see the antithetical relationship, the disparateness of the two pictures that they're looking at. You paint a different portrait. Let that portrait look like Christ. Let it look like 1 Corinthians 13 verses 4 through 7 as you emulate the love chapter there. Or Galatians 5 as you emulate the fruit of the Spirit. And then your children will see two different pictures. One good, one bad. One dark, one light. One look like Jesus, one doesn't look like Jesus. And then when they grow up and mature, the hope is that they will see that this is a better way to walk, that I want to walk the path of Jesus. It's less complicated. It's less dysfunctional. The exportability of a dysfunctional life just has generational impact. And this child doesn't want to do that because they've seen your positive representation of Christ, even though your spouse chose not to walk that way. And so you can begin making specific changes today. Now, if that is you in your situation, then that's where you do want to talk to someone. You need a mentor of the same gender in your local church and just lay out your problem to them and say, hey, man, our marriage is not a picture of Christ and the church. We have children coming along and they are absorbing us. They see us and they're going to emulate. They're going to be affected. It's a shaping influence. And how we're influencing them is adverse. My spouse is not willing to change, but I am. And I am calling on you to come alongside me to help me to make whatever changes that I can so that I can present a portrait of Jesus Christ to our children to give them a better option than the option that they have before them. Again, the title of this is My Son Has Three Practice Wives to Make Him a Better Husband. It is a part of my free digital downloaded book that I want you to have called The Talk. It's about the sex talk, but obviously it is much more than that. Please get it. You can have as many copies as you want. Let others know about it because it is an important book that applies to all of us who have children and then all of us who are doing the work of disciple making, biblical counseling. Let this be one of the tools that you use. For those of you who can invest in our ministry, would you be so kind to do that? Help us keep our resources free. If you are able to do that, then you can donate to our ministry on a monthly, annually basis or a one-time donation. I would really appreciate it. We need your help. We do enjoy giving these things away, but we know that the only way we can do that is by having people that are investing in Life Over Coffee. And so if you would do that, or if you're able to do that, rather, I greatly appreciate it. For those of you who can't, then the way that you can bless our ministry is by sharing our content. Share it on socials, wherever, whatever platform you're on, within your church. Copy a URL, the link, and send it to someone in your church. Let your pastor know about these resources, the free books that we have in our store, all of these articles, podcasts, videos, etc. You can help our ministry that way by letting other people know about it and by sharing our content. Some can invest financially. Some can invest by giving our stuff away. And so you choose, and I would be most blessed if you would do that. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us. Learn more and get access to other resources at lifeovercoffee.com.